Hey gang, quick bit of housekeeping for you before we start the show. And this is only relevant to those of you who listen to us on the Apple Podcasts app or via Apple. So if you don't, move along, as the great Obi-Wan Kenobi would say, nothing to see here. But if you do listen to us via Apple, listen carefully, particularly if you're an old school listener of the show. Before we became the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN, when we were the NFL show, you would have got the show updated when we moved without having to do a thing. But that's because the old show had a divert put on it. So to check, you're subscribed to the new feed because the old one is going to go pretty soon. Check out the Nat Coombs Show. Search for it on the app via the podcast browse section or the store section if you're looking on the desktop, and find our show and see if it shows whether you're subscribed or not. If you are, great, you're on the right feed. If you're not, hit subscribe and delete the old one. So head on over, not in your library, but actually onto Apple. Search the Nat Coombs Show. Make sure you're subscribed to the feed that you find. Simple. Good luck. Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN. Good to have you with us. We had a terrific movie special with Vernon Kay a few weeks back. So good that we thought to do it once again. Because, hey, let's face it, there are more than one or two sports movies to be getting our teeth into. And with your help as well, you fired through lots of suggestions. That's exactly what we're going to do this week. Tom Deacon in the house, comedian, podcaster, presenter. Really looking forward to catching up with Tom. We'll talk about some of the key NFL news that's broken over the last couple of days as well, but mainly we're talking sporting movies, hopefully giving you some ideas to feed your mind and to get involved with films that you might have seen that you haven't checked out for a while. Hopefully some that you'll discover for the first time as well. So all that to come very, very shortly. We've got lots of pods rolling through the off season, of course, and some great guests coming up. So make sure if you haven't already, wherever you're listening to us, you subscribe, you will not miss a trick. Our social at the NC show is how you get in touch with the show. We're pushing stuff out each and every day too, over on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, to get involved with that. Right. Sports and movies time. Let's check in with Tom Deacon. Tom Deacon, it is always good to see you. And I can see it because we're recording this pod through the wonders of Zoom, although other video conferencing software are equally good as well. And so I can see you as well with a beautiful microphone to boot too.
Oh, thank you very much. It's an absolute moneymaker, a podcast. So I've invested in this. Mm-hmm. So maybe in 2030, I may recoup the money that I spent on this mic.
How is your new podcast going? Because last time, last time we were on the show, you launched it. I don't know, but it's definitely launched the last few weeks, hasn't it? So tell us more about it.
In a nutshell, it's just about getting to know people a little bit better. So I've just had a former UFC fighter on called Jess Liaudin, who's transitioned into acting. Nice. It suggests that it would be better if he was a wrestler with the acting that they do, and also Gordon Strachan as well. But other guests are coming up.
UFC fighter Gordon Strachan.
Yeah, he was epic, wasn't he? They couldn't understand what he was necessarily saying, but damn, did he deliver a punch when he did.
To have seen Gordon Strachan in the WWE?
He would have been amazing. Yeah, no one would have expected him. He's not statured, he's not huge, but he's quick. So it's a bit of fun. But as always, great to be back on this podcast and getting to chat to you about the sport that I love. And apparently we're talking films today.
We are talking films today. I'm looking forward to this. Now, we did this a couple of weeks ago with Vernon Kay, and the show was so well received by our listeners. We thought, let's do it again. And Harry, the producer, and I thought, who else but Tom Deacon to come back on the show and talk through some of his favorite sporting movies. So it's not just NFL movies, although both of us have got a list together, haven't we? Both of us have got football movies in there, but we've expanded beyond that. And in the case of one of your films, it's definitely quite an expansive and broad definition of sports movies. But I will look forward to getting to those in a bit. We'll also got a lot of tweets and other social media communication from our listeners in terms of their films. So I might throw in a few at the end as well in terms of what our listeners are saying. But I think we're going to keep on rolling the movie show, because there's plenty to get into. Just a couple of bits of news, NFL news to get into at the top, though. Most importantly of all, Tom Deacon, the Pro Bowl is going to Las Vegas.
Hello.
Yes, it is. Announced this week that it is the forthcoming Pro Bowl. So 2021, of course, the Pro Bowl held the week before the Super Bowl. Often a big issue, big concern for the NFL to compared to other all-star games. It's always been a challenge to keep it interesting, I think, for the fans and the viewers. The players love it. It's a jolly and they enjoy it. And for a long time, of course, in Hawaii, and they've been working out different ways of making the Pro Bowl a little bit more compelling. Well, clearly they've nailed it this time. Vegas, the Super Bowl in Tampa, the Pro Bowl in Vegas a week before. I'm just trying to work out our logistics. We can handle both, right? Fly over to Vegas, then Tampa by the Monday.
I mean, listen, if that was an invite, I am well up for it. I cannot wait for it. The Pro Bowl to me, this is exciting because, you know, it isn't the greatest spectacle, but it's the kind of like fantasy league of what all NFL fans will have been doing. We've got our fantasy draft, we've got our teams, and we line up the best of the best. Well, minus two teams that are in the Super Bowl, this is the best of the best. The players go head to head. And I think Las Vegas missed out on having the draft there. So for everybody involved in Las Vegas, they're able to have a bit more of a spotlight shown on them. And of course, they've got their first NFL season happening there right. This year with the Raiders. So this is a big look. I think it's exciting. I want to see more quarterbacks going head to head with moving targets in competitions that they do. I think it's a great event, and I think it'll be really good fun.
What would you introduce to the Pro Bowl in terms of skill, challenge-wise, or similar to get it that extra step forward? Because it's definitely improved, and with the whole kind of superstar skill challenge stuff, that's good. We like that. That's definitely a fun thing. What else would you add to the mix to make it even closer to where it needs to be?
Okay, here's my idea. It's straight off the top of my noggin. Okay, now hear me out. Okay, many a time doing stand-up comedy, not so much at the moment. Well, none at all. But normally I'd be rushing for a train, particularly in London, and I need to get to a venue in time. Now, what you'll notice in a packed area, there's a lot of people, and I tend to have to run through them. And I've often thought to myself, what would a running back be like in this situation? So with people coming towards the running back, how quickly can they dodge through getting to the other side to make the train?
The Saquon Barkley commute run. I love it.
So I'm in. You are welcome to that. Wide receivers as well. They're all talking about a pivot, turning on a dime. Can they get to the train? Because obviously the repercussion is if you don't make it, you've got to pay for a train ticket on the day. And that is much more expensive.
Amazing. I love that. I am putting £20 down on Cordarrelle Patterson to win that. Straight away, even though I don't know who else is it competing and entering. I'm still back in Cordarrelle Patterson for that. I'd like to see some, maybe all of the different challenges in World's Strongest Man from the kind of mid to late 80s, early 90s introduced in some way when they used to hold those giant magnets of champagne. Do you remember that?
Don't drop them. And all the fans around the ring around are thinking, well, if he doesn't drop them, maybe we'll get a glass of that. It's interesting right. To see with the NFL players, the amount that they are lifting. And you're just like, wow, like Garrett at the Browns. You're like, oh, Miles Garrett. You're like, that's insane what he's lifting. So there could be a strongest man element added to it. I think the players will be up for that.
Listen, I'm noting both of those ideas down. I know Harry, the producer, he's got Commissioner Goodell's direct personal email. So he will be sending those in an email missive imminently, probably while we're recording the show, actually. So we might even have an answer back before we've wrapped. So other key news, interesting news developing this week. Colin Kaepernick, who, of course, has been front and center once again in the last couple of weeks with everything that's been happening in America, across the world, really, in terms of activism and support of the Black Lives Matter movement. But Kaepernick's still conspicuous in his absence from the NFL, which is head-scratching to most of us. I know certainly to you, of course, a huge Kaepernick fan, being a 49ers fan. And, of course, Cap was the quarterback when he fell in love with the team, right? So you've got a strong affinity with him, you know, outside of everything else he stands for and everything else he has done as a player. You're a big fan.
Yeah, and definitely when I started following the Niners, they had Alex Smith as their quarterback. Just getting to the point where, like, Alex Smith and Jim Harbaugh, this is a great combination, finally. And then unfortunately he got injured, went down. Kaepernick comes in, takes over, and never looks back, to the point where it was him and Blaine Gabbert fighting for a starting position.
Blaine Gabbert.
And you're like,
I haven't heard for a while.
Exactly. And he's at Tampa Bay. So if anything happens to Tom Brady, Blaine Gabbert, next man up, I believe. So it was interesting. He's a talented quarterback and a very exciting quarterback to watch through injuries or whatever. And the whole kneeling against police brutality is something that many players wanted to get on board with, but couldn't or didn't feel that they could do that. And now it's completely flipped on its head. And quite rightly, he's a talented quarterback. Is he a starting quarterback for 32 teams? Maybe not, but he's definitely a very viable backup. And so that's why there's talk about him coming back into the league. And I, for one, would love to see that.
This is the crazy thing. We've talked about a number of times that, you know, I get the argument, as you say, quite rightly, that is he a starter? It's unclear, you know, and he's been out of the game obviously for a number of years now. But when you have 70, 80, 90 quarterbacks on rosters, I mean, most are carrying three. So, you know, do the math there, it's 96, right? And factoring practice squads and everything else, it is ridiculous the cap it doesn't have a team. Well, that might be changing because there's a lot of buzz at the moment. We're recording this Thursday afternoon. The Kaepernick is going to be looked at by a number of teams. And there's been a few false dawns here. Of course, he had that quite curious workout last autumn that didn't amount to much. Teams have suggested that they would be interested in him in the past, but nobody has done anything about it. Could change. Anthony Lynn, of course, the Chargers head coach, said on Wednesday, it would be crazy to not have him on your workout list. Although NFL.com reports they haven't actually made contact yet with Kaepernick. Lynn says, I haven't spoken with Colin, not sure where he's at as far as in his career, what he wants to do, but Colin definitely fits the style of quarterback for the system that we are going to be running. Of course, Tyrod Taylor, the de facto starter, they drafted Justin Herbert, 6th overall in the recent drafts. Kaepernick to Los Angeles, a possibility. We will watch that story closely, and I wonder whether Kaepernick will end up landing with a team. I hope so, if he wants to still play. And the reports are, Tom, that he still does. He still wants to play, right? So
yeah, of course. And I think
terrific to see him back in the league.
100%. It's interesting with NFL. It's a financial thing. He had to leave the Niners when Shanahan came in because he was going to be owed $14 million that year. So you're thinking, well, we can't afford that. We wouldn't want to improve other areas of the team. But it's interesting that Anthony Lynn said that, and I don't disagree with him in any way. I just can't see Kaepernick ending up on that roster because Tyrod Taylor's there, Justin Herbert. It's great to have him to work out, but I think Anthony Lynn has said, yeah, I can understand other teams taking him, but I don't see it happening. I just think he is a talented guy. You wouldn't not have him in your team, but I don't think he'll be at the landing spot, will be the Chargers.
All right. Watch this space, I think, is what we're saying there. So let's get down to business then. It is another movie special. There are a ton of places we could go. And as I said at the top, we decided to kind of flip it and alternate. And each, how many films have we got? So six or, oh no, we've got eight looking at the list. Eight, so four each. So a lot of ground to cover. Plus we're going to dive in on, as I say on Twitter, at the NC shows, how you get in touch with the show. It look at some of the suggestions and probably omissions that we've been remiss in not talking about from some of our listeners. So Tom, I'm going to let, as our guest, I'm going to let you kick things off. Where are you going first in terms of, is these your favorite sports movies of all time, or just sports movies you wanted to talk about?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Nat. When I got that trusty WhatsApp message from yourself, would you like to be on the show? I said, of course, Nat. You don't even have to ask. Just tell me the time, I'll be there. And then I saw my Twitter popping off with so many suggestions from people, from fans. And I was like, which film do I choose? And then I was thinking, what's that Mark Wahlberg film? And then I saw that you had suggested you were going to talk about it.
Yeah,
I think for me, it's films that I have an emotional connection to. There are so many to choose from. My mum was very quick to even get involved. She was like, are you going to talk about this Sporting Life? It's a rugby film. And I said, no, it's black and white. Nah, forget it.
Oh, poor Mrs. D. I think it's a fine choice, Mr. Deacon.
Yeah. So listen, I've gone for this one because it's the film that I have to watch at least once a year, and that's Moneyball. For me, it's an incredible film, that really just makes me think about the possibilities. It teaches us more about investment and investment in people. And you mentioned at the beginning of the show about my podcast, interesting enough, not WWE Gordon Strachan, but what Gordon Strachan does as a manager is gets the best out of people. And it's based on the true story of the Oakland Athletics. It reinvented pretty much the game of baseball, and they were dealt a hand where they're not financially able to compete with other teams, and yet they still were able to get almost to win the championship because they looked at things differently. And I think that's how fans of, say, a smaller team are able to go, there is a chance one day.
It's a terrific film. So started, of course, or came from the Michael Lewis book, which was, has been a seminal book for me. Cause I guess when I started, you know, loved American sports all my life, but when I started broadcasting and NFL on Five was my first gig, and NFL is my first love, but I've got a huge passion for baseball as well. In fact, here we go. As a wheel out of baseball that I've had since I was a kid that my dad brought over from New York when I was 8 years old. I've still got
the same way.
And I've covered it. You know, I did it for a few years, the live shows on Radio Five with JC, Josh Chetwin, who a lot of our listeners will remember, of course, from his Channel 5 days too. And so I've always had a love for baseball, and particularly the literature, and also the movies. And there are a lot of options I thought of here to put baseball movies in. And like I said, we'll do other movie shows, gang. So there will be room for more. But Moneyball is that double whammy. Terrific book. Michael Lewis, a financial writer. He's got a great book called Liar's Poker as well, which is all about Wall Street and
The Big Short world. As well, yeah, which was a great one.
He's absolutely. But when I first read Moneyball, and as I say, it was at the start of my professional career, so it always carried kind of special memories for me. I never thought, looked at it as a book that could be made into a film. And that's, I think, what is so impressive. And Aaron Sorkin, the screenwriter, one of my favorite writers at The West Wing, one of the great shows of the last 20, 30 years. Of course, Sorkin is the master of that and devised it and wrote the majority of the first four series. That's testament to his ability, of course, but it's also testament to a terrific cast. So let's go there. And it got me thinking. So Billy Beane mentioned, front office guy. And he said, look, I've seen Billy Beane. He's a handsome guy. He's a handsome, impressive guy, but you've got to think you've hit the jackpot when you get told they're going to make a film of your life. And Brad Pitt's playing you.
I know, it's like when people say, if someone was to play the story of your life, who would you want? He would have probably said, I'd take Brad Pitt, but I don't think I'll get him. It is a truly, I mean, you're talking about being a baseball fan. I think this is a film that goes, it's beyond sport. It's about changing conformity and what you're used to and thinking of new ways to improve your team. And Jonah Hill's brilliant in it. Peter Brand, and Brad Pitt gives him an opportunity to shine because there isn't much of an alternative. The film, for those who haven't seen it, and I'm sure so many have, starts off with Brad Pitt losing in the final and then asking the chairman, the guy that has all the money, going, you got to give me a bit more money. And he said, is there anything else I can help you with? And that's it. There is no discussion. You cannot compete with the Yankees financially. Yeah. And the team's being gutted. So you've got to come up with a new way. And that's where that whole mechanic of looking at the statistics rather than paying for it, it's paying for runs, as opposed to paying for the player who's going to get them.
Yeah. It's a new way of looking at it. And of course the evaluation really, and you've got the, you know, terrific scene where, and or scenes plural, where there's juxtaposition of the old school baseball scouts who are very skeptical, of course, of Beane and his new approach and evaluate certain things. And the reality is, you talked to a lot of baseball guys, Josh, I mean, you know, notably, but, you know, other baseball journalists that I've spoken to, it's not necessarily as binary as those old school guys don't know anything and the new school guys are, particularly as this and Billy Beane's approach to sabermetrics and evaluation has taken more of a foothold in not just baseball, but in sports. It's not that they're always right all the time. It's usually a combination of things, but the fact is he was bringing in a new approach, a new way of looking at it, looking at the data, looking at how often does this player get on base? It doesn't matter if he's not hitting a certain average or his slugging percentage or his volume of home runs. Is he getting on base? Because that is, you know, the object of the game, right?
So, yeah.
an objective of hitting. But those scenes are great when you've got the old school tobacco spitting 50-year-old scouts and then Billy Beane, they're kind of eyeing skeptically. The Jonah Hill character is interesting because it's an amalgamation. It's a combination of two different. Paul Podesta was one of Beane's lieutenants, and it's a combination. He asked to be removed, Podesta, from the project because he didn't feel comfortable with the representation. So the Jonah Hill character is essentially a hybrid of two different people. Mm. Brad Pitt, let me ask you this, Tom, because I think, again, more recently than certainly Moneyball was made in 2011, of course, with the Tarantino film Once Upon a Time in LA. Once Upon a Time in LA? Is it? Is
Hollywood. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I'll put that up as. Obviously, recently with the Tarantino movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, he's gained a huge amount of plaudits and credibility. For a long time, that Brad Pitt was one of those actors in Hollywood, the big star, mega star, but not particularly taken seriously as an actor. Certainly not if you compare him to look at his contemporaries, Johnny Depp, even like Matt Damon, right? You know, who seem to have this, I guess, additional layer as far as critics and you know, the Hollywood intelligentsia that he is a serious actor, a credible actor. And Brad Pitt was never really that. Do you think this was the film that changed that? Because, of course, it got a fair amount of Oscar attention, and Pitt was nominated for Best Actor for his role as Billy Beane. So I guess this was the film that changed the perception of Brad Pitt as an actor.
Yeah, I'd agree with you that, for me, Brad Pitt, seeing him in this role, it was less is more, of which they talk about sometimes in acting. You know, in Glorious Bastards, which Brad Pitt's in, Troy, there's so many films he's in, but for me,
Troy.
I know, just
what a movie.
Hello, just appeared on Netflix. May have watched it.
You said, I've got to watch Moneyball at least once a year at the top of this. Do you have to watch Troy at least once a week?
No, that's biannually. So I watched a couple more times actually. Brad Pitt, the less was more in this film. It's the silence. It's those moments of, you can just see a general manager, which he plays as Billy Beane, working out whether he's going to lose his job the whole time. And I think this transcends to other sports when you're thinking, I've got to try something different to see if it works. And then at the end, I don't want to ruin it, but when he gets offered to go to another team based on what he's able to achieve with the Oakland Athletic, it's just remarkable. It just has everything. You're so drawn to it. Magnetism. When he flips the table in one scene, you're like, go on, Billy Beane, get in there. Like, and trying to trade players. It's, you're very much invested in him. And I think as an actor, he's able to bring you in and care about him. And the whole scene with the whole trying to get a soda machine, and the players on the plane are like, why do I have to give a dollar? And Jonah Hill's trying to explain because you won't see it, but it goes onto the field, these dollars, whereas other teams get free soda. It's remarkable. It's not about baseball, but it is about baseball. It's about how you have to take a leap of faith to try something new, and you will be rewarded.
Exactly that. That's really, really well put. Just a quick one and we'll move on because we've got a ton of movies to look at. Jonah Hill, terrific in this, terrific comic actor. And it's got me thinking, I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think Jonah Hill started as a stand-up per se. But so if he did, apologies. But the transition from stand-up...
Super bad. Super bad.
Yeah, super bad, of course. Was that his first film? The transition from stand-up to acting isn't always a straightforward one. And of course, there have been some wildly successful Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy, of course, you know, back in the day, or Murphy still now, obviously, but were brilliant. And you know, that period in the 80s as well, when Eddie Murphy was making Trading Places, Beverly Hills Cop, was the biggest star in Hollywood, and just flawlessly segued into it. But it isn't always a straightforward move. As a stand-up, why do you think that is?
I think they definitely have the ability to move across, or there's humor and that resonates with people when you're watching. If someone's humorous, you're drawn to them. I feel like particularly with Jonah Hill, he was just able to move across. There was the whole losing weight to then gain the weight again. He just, and again, taking the glasses off was that turning point for him. And then I remember, sorry, when you were asking me the question, I was thinking about how I met him to do an interview with him, for Get Him to the Greek. And
yeah, right.
So you've got Russell Brand in one room, and my job was to go in and ask Jonah Hill questions about Russell Brand. And I was, and my producer was there at the side. It's a proper kind of, you've got cameras directed at both people in the room, and that's it. And my producer's nodding, like encouraging me, keep asking the questions about Russell Brand, nothing about Jonah Hill. And at the end, I apologized to him. I was like, I'm so sorry. I had to, like, I felt like I wanted to ask you about you and Superbad and what you do. And I think as a comedian, I know that Russell Brand is a comedian as well, but you get overlooked. It's like you can't play serious. So when he got the opportunity to play serious in this, he nailed it, and that was it. And then people take him, both he's comedic, but also serious as well.
That's a great point to think about, Chip. So Robin Williams, who, again, another stand-up that made that transition, but for a long time was just doing comedy films or... Good Morning Vietnam, I guess, is a tragic comedy. I mean, he's brilliantly funny in it, but it's ultimately a tragic film. But then he kind of segued into playing really, really, well, certainly a really dark character in One Hour Photo.
Oh, wow, that was dark. But Good Will Hunting, he won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. And, and it just goes to show that, like, the ability to perform and to affect the viewer who is watching is evident there, whether you're getting them to laugh or you're getting them to cry. And I think that comedians can do that because they're used to getting the humor out. You just need to give them the opportunity to get people to cry as well.
The right role. All right. So my first film, we'll share it, Tom, because you said you wanted to do it as well. So we'll go 50-50 on it, is Invincible with Mark Wahlberg, all about Vinnie Papale. Another true story. Vinnie Papale was a Philadelphia native in the late 70s, in a tough old time for a tough city where, you know, America was going through a recession, and things were hard, a gritty neighborhood in Philly. And he gets an opportunity because the Philadelphia Eagles, under fire, not doing particularly well, decide to hold open tryouts. Open tryouts, anybody can go down and try and win a spot on the Philadelphia Eagles roster. Dick Vermeil was the coach at the time, of course, who is personally one of my favorite coaches in the history of the game. I mean, talk about wearing his heart on his sleeve, and I love that fact about him. He's played in this film, Invincible, by Greg Kinnear. I think he's a terrific actor, and he really visibly really, really kind of arrestingly similar, but he really captures that whole side and sensibility. Great performance from Greg Kinnear. But the film's all about Mark Wahlberg, and not dissimilar, I think, to Brad Pitt. I think Mark Wahlberg is an underrated actor, and it's a sensitive performance here because, as I say, this is a true story of a guy who is a hugely talented player, but for one reason or another, never got the opportunity to make it and now gets this second chance in life, second chance of making it. And it is all about battling his way through all these tryouts, and he gets a spot in training camp. And the story and the jeopardy of the story is he going to make it and get a spot on the roster and everything he has to deal with? It's unashamedly feel good. There's no doubt about that. But I also think it's quite an underrated film because I think because it's such it's an idea, is a true story, but an idea I'm sure we all think of. Tom, I'm sure you're still holding out for that opportunity where Southampton,
I know,
in the relegation zone, the fans are turning against them, and you might get that open day tryout. I mean,
listen, we're hoping, right? I want to share something with you, Nat. A couple of years ago, I happened to be looking at the ages of the players and suddenly realized that I can only be a goalkeeper now. And when you realize that's shattering. It really is. I mean, can I run like Frank Gore and still be running or be like Tom Brady? You're spot on. I love the fact that Mark Wahlberg almost in a place where he was taken as a serious actor who's now Mr. Joke Around Mark Wahlberg. Right. But this, it resonates with every fan, like you're asking me, the fact that your team might have a tryout and you could play for them, that just, it's the feel good factor where you're like, will he make it? There's a great moment in the film where he's going to get cut, and the way for him to show the one thing he has, which is speed, he's not as big or as tough as the other guys, is he just takes off the pads. He takes off those so he can run faster, and he makes it into the special team. And that's it. But the film doesn't build up to this moment where they win the championship. They win the prize. It just goes to show that one person's journey and for people to take a chance. And that's exactly what he gets. He gets a chance to shine. And obviously it's a good feel good factor for the whole city, because they go, he was just one of us and now he's playing for our team.
Which particularly resonates. I mean, that's going to be true of any team, right? You know, whatever sport, wherever we're talking about in the world, but it's particularly true of Philly, right? Particularly at this time in this era. I mean, Philly fans are incredible. I mean, they are, you know, they revel in this reputation of being incredibly hard to please. Of course, famously throwing snowballs at Father Christmas. one of my favorite stories from them. They are, and it's depicted in the film, you know, he is a season ticket holder, sits with his same guys. You mentioned Good Will Hunting. There are similarities, I think, and parallels there, right? That, you know, in Good Will Hunting, it is breaking away from the neighborhood that he's entrenched in for a better life, because the you know, the prognosis is bleak, and it's not dissimilar here in terms of, you know, a blue collar, hard nosed neighborhood. And the players, or rather the friends that he's grown up watching the Eagles with, it's an opportunity for him to leave that life behind. But at the same time, he doesn't want to do that. He's part of that community, part of the neighborhood. And that's a really interesting dynamic in the story.
No airs and graces. I think that is Philly. I've been there. I've watched a game there. I watched them lose when they should have won. It was against the Panthers. Carson Wentz taking on Cam Newton. And it just felt gritty. My girlfriend and I loved it. We loved Philly. We thought, oh, do you know what? This is a real cool place. There's no thinking you're above anybody else. And this is what the main character that Mark Wahlberg plays is, where he's working in a bar, sees on the TV they've got tryouts, and everyone goes, you should do it. And he's like, nah. But not like we have this American dream where we're like, I can. If I believe I can do it, I can. It's the American dream. It's rather the opposite. It's going, he's going to go along and try, but everyone had to force him to go. It's not like Britain's got talent or America's got talent, where you're like, this guy will not shut up about how talented they are, but they haven't been given a chance. It's the polar opposite. And it's gritty. And I remember buying it on DVD and spending a fortune on it. Like, I mean, we're talking above £12 to get this DVD, because I wanted to find as many NFL films as I could, because I loved the sport and was getting into it. And I watched this and I was like, I like the Eagles. They're an underdog.
Alternate sliding doors moment, alternate reality. You could have been, Tom Deacon could have been an Eagles fan.
Yeah, but Mark Wahlberg and his entourage, who apparently that series is based on, I was just like, nah, I can't follow Mark Wahlberg. No, thank you.
Where, it's in terms of Mark Wahlberg then, is he, I said there are parallels really with Brad Pitt in terms of he's a big Hollywood movie star, but perhaps not as highly regarded as other actors of his generation. So he has about that Moneyball, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
He has had The Fighter, which is a fantastic film, which I was thinking of offering up, where he plays Mickey Ward.
Great film.
And that's really, you know, again, the underdog. He plays the underdog that you want to succeed. So he plays that character very well.
I suppose in that, and I'm all with you completely with the understated and celebrating that, and there are definite parallels between Mark Wahlberg and Brad Pitt. But with Christian Bale in The Fighter, it's just an unbelievable performance. And respect to Mark Wahlberg for offsetting against that, when you've got this raw, visceral performance from Christian Bale, who plays his brother, who was a decent boxer back in the day and is now essentially a crack addict, right?
And he fought Sugar Ray, and basically it's about brothers who Mickey Ward is the fighter who's currently fighting, and yet you've got the older brother who still everyone talks about the time he played fought Sugar Ray, and they were like, I knocked him down, and they're like, no, Sugar Ray slipped, and so he lives in the shadow of his brother, even though his brother now has turned down a path which is not desirable. And yet Mickey, he's not getting the credit he deserves. It's always the brother.
The family. It's always the brother. Yeah.
And it's always the mother that's, why can't you be more like your brother? And it's a family story. I should have picked The Fighter. It is a great film.
Well, you have picked it. We throw it out there as well. It's a great shot. So yeah, Invincible, again, I reckon a lot of you would have seen it, but I reckon a lot of you won't have done as well. And if right now, with everything going on in the world and a lot of troubles and tribulations and things to deal with, it will guarantee, I guarantee it'll put a smile on your face. I guarantee it will.
So 100%.
Go and check that out. 2 hours of escapism there. All right. Where are you going next for your next one?
Well, let's stay on that theme then. What will make you feel good? I love The Blind Side. I reminded myself of the film. I watched the trailer again and I was getting emotional, and I was tearing up a little bit. Sandra Bullock, plays, a mother, from a white privileged, southern family who take in, this young black kid who is from an impoverished background and give him an opportunity to shine. And he ends up, it's based on a real life, story of Michael Orr, who went on to win the Super Bowl with the Baltimore Ravens, played at the Titans and at the Panthers as well. And I think now in the current climate, it just goes to show that the world can be a horrible place, and yet at the same time, people can do good things that can hopefully, you know, make other people's lives better. And so you watch this film and you go through all the emotions, and yeah, it's just very much a good feel factor film where Michael Orr becomes a left tackle, and The Blind Side is when the quarterback, if he's a right-handed quarterback, turns. So he can't see what's behind him. And, this Michael Orr's character is to basically make sure protects him. And, it's just a tearjerker, but it's so apt for now and how, you know, society is skewed, and this goes to show there can be good in the world.
Yeah, there are parallels with some of the other films we've talked about that were Invincible, certainly, and Good Will Hunting in passing, in the sense that there are different trajectories for kids from the same neighborhood, right? There is the way out of a difficult situation, and there is exactly, of course, what happens to Michael Orr, and one of the most jarring parts of the film for me is his friend that ultimately gets left behind and gets sucked into a life of crime and isn't afforded the opportunities that Michael Orr is. And it makes me think about all of those kids all around the world who could be playing in a Super Bowl, who could be playing in a World Cup final, who could just be playing sport professionally or getting to college and finding a different life that never get the opportunity.
And just to know that he goes on right at the end of the film, that you find out he goes on to play for the Baltimore Ravens, you're like, oh, you're just crying that little bit more. So I strongly suggest it to everybody to go and check it out.
Sandra Bullock won an Oscar for The Rock. Do you know, turn the role down?
No, but this is a great bit of film trivia. I love this. I'm going to say
yes.
Oh, wow. Maybe someone, I don't know why in my head I was like Meryl Streep.
Martin McCutcheon didn't turn it down.
Yeah, it was difficult. It was Love Actually or that. Someone like J-Lo, because she was acting a lot of the time.
Ooh, J-Lo would be a good shot. No, it wasn't. I'll give you one more guess.
Ooh, this is where I really, Reese Witherspoon. I'm just thinking of American actors.
Could it work? Julia Roberts.
Oh, of course. Yes, that makes sense, because she was in
the role and turn it down. Yeah.
Aaron Brockovich. I think it was a great film where, again, like, empowerment and that sort of theme that came through the film where she was able to stand up for her community. Yeah, I like Sandra Bullock. Well done for her getting an Oscar.
Nick Saban, the Alabama head coach, plays himself in it. He's one of a number of coaches that plays themselves. Quite an awkward performance.
Yeah, well, listen, he's kind of in the realm of Bill Belichick. They love talking football, and anything else seems to be an inconvenience.
Belichick would never play himself in a film. He would just point blank refuse.
Well, there's a few opportunities to be in a few Star Wars films if he puts the hood up again.
You know, actually, Belichick would be good in his, Star Wars film. I could see him credibly as long as he can give him much dialogue.
Yeah, just stand in the background. Just be one of many
Who would you cast as Belichick in a film?
Who could oddly enough, Nat, And you asked me about Brad Pitt and which actor I'd like playing my life. Can I choose Bill Belichick to play mine? I just love to see.
Nice.
I just love to see him on stage doing stand up.
It'd be hilarious. If you gave him decent material and he just deadpanned it.
Yeah,
it would be good. I could see it. I could be probably quite good comic timing, Eric. Well, he's supposed to be quite funny, isn't he, Belichick?
Yeah, the idea that we have
dry sense of humor.
Very dry, but also very charitable and very giving. So actually, the side that we see, he just doesn't want to talk to the press or media. Fine, but behind the scenes, you find out that he's actually a real caring character. So that's all that matters, and that's what the players—they obviously want to play for him. So he must have warmth there.
Now, I want to give a shout out to Marley, part of our social media team. We found a really, really brilliant response from Tracy Dunn. This was posted on Facebook about The Blind Side, and Tracy messaged us at the NC Show. Is how you follow us on our social channels, and same handle on each one: Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Saying that her 11-year-old son watched The Blind Side, and that got him into football, and he now plays football in the US. So,
no way.
Her 11-year-old son watched The Blind Side, hadn't watched football, or certainly wasn't into football before that, got him into it, and now here he is all these years later playing football in the States. So great. Thanks for that, Tracy. Love that story. All right, next up, I am going with one of my favorite comedies, certainly of the last 20-odd years, and it has been vintage from America in terms of comedy in the last 20 years. Prolific. How many good comedies? Will Ferrell's been at the front of it. And this is right up there with all of those terrific Ferrell movies, Judd Apatow films, Dodgeball, Ben Stiller at his finest. What I particularly love about Dodgeball, the absurdity of it, is the relentless sharpness all the way through. There is barely a weak gag in it, and all kinds of different comedy gets thrown out, different levels, often ridiculously puerile, but still very, very funny, to the degree where this is a 12, and I was watching it with my eldest son. Dodgeball's fine. I mean, it's not too risque. It's actually quite a few jokes that maybe were right on the 12 to 15 marker there. But nevertheless, we had great fun watching it. Lots of brilliant cameos in it as well. A rip-roaring fun. I challenge anyone to watch Dodgeball and not like it. I'm not sure I want to know you. The pace doesn't let up. Stiller is just absolutely prime absurd. And Stiller is such an interesting actor because he is either ridiculous like he is in Dodgeball, or, again, the word we're overusing a fair bit, understated, but brilliantly so in, you say, Meet the Parents. He's just a brilliant performance. He's got such a wide range as a comic actor, and this is a virtuoso performance from him, isn't it?
Yeah, Dodgeball, grab life by the ball. It's a brilliant film. It's so funny. And again, it's rooting for the underdogs. As the clues in the title, Average Joe's Gymnasium, going against this conglomerate, the Global Gym. And you're rooting for them from the start. And you're also thinking, how on earth are they going to win this battle? And oddly enough, we talked earlier about the Pro Bowl skills competition they implemented last season, this dodgeball round, which was fantastic to see. And actually, after watching the film, I know it's a comedy, but I was a bit like, I kind of want to play a bit of dodgeball. Dodgeball looks like good fun. And I've seen roughly nearby where I live, whenever we're able to again, there's a dodgeball league, and I'm kind of like, I'm up for this.
Man, now you're talking. Maybe we should get a show team together. Well, look, Asmir is going to be awesome at dodgeball.
Of course. Yeah. His safe pair of hands, literally. But can you throw it? Can you move? I mean, what's his name in dodgeball? Patches O'Houlihan. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a dodgeball. Like it's the greatest quote that, even when I'm out, playing with my mates on a bit of a five-a-side or something, you're just able to throw out so many good quotes from the film.
So Patches O'Houlihan, Hank Azaria plays the young Patches when they have that brilliant Pathé-esque kind of throwback black and white to when Dodgeball was first created. But Rip Torn, of course, plays him in the present day, and one of the great cameo roles in comedy over the last 20 years. I think Rip Torn, brilliant in that role. Elsewhere, interesting, speaking of cameos, Chuck Norris is in it. David the Hoff as well. Also, William Shatner. So that is a hell of a trifecta there. Gary Cole plays the ESPN anchor. Now, Gary Cole, who started out on a show called Midnight Caller, which, look it up, kids, if you haven't seen that one. That was a show I remember when I was a kid where he played, you love it, Tom. Gary Cole played Jack Killian, the Nighthawk.
You've already got me on that.
He had a late night talk radio show, but was, and this is where I'm reaching because I don't really remember beyond that, but they always somehow seem to get sucked into crime, or, you know, some kind of something going on, and the police would always bring him in. I don't quite know where the connection went, but he'd always, in the same way that in Murder, She Wrote, she was sucked into wherever she was, there'd be a crime. In every episode, Jack Killian, like, I don't know, someone would phone up the show and that were going to get him sucked in. But anyway, that's how Gary Cole started out. And then he's been one of those actors just bounced around, made a, you know, a solid career that you would, everyone, as soon as you see him, it's like Scott Bakula, you know, from Quantum Leap. Same thing. Like he's just been working for years and years. Played the vice president in the West Wing, in the aforementioned West Wing as well. And he's great in this, just a very slick operator as the anchor. So solid cast from top to bottom. And that's often so significant, I think, that when you've got an ensemble piece where there is not a weak link, everybody is just on point. And even if it's just a role with three or four lines, it's just carefully thought and cast. That just adds so much more to it as well. Dodgeball.
He's also Gary Cole in Talladega Nights, the Ballad of Ricky Bobby, which is all about NASCAR. Moving on to another sport.
I hadn't actually watched it all the way through, and I love Will Ferrell, but I've never watched it all the way through. But I was flicking through channels the other night and it came on, and I just saw the scene when Sacha Baron Cohen is the French comes into the bar. Oh, that's one of the great scenes. Just brilliant. That is a good point, actually, that, you know, this movie, you know, is part of that phase of American comedy films with Anchorman, and, you know, Ferrell obviously prominent in it as well, and we mentioned you know, Superbad before, and Judd Apatow, and all of the stuff that he has brought into the mix. I mean, when was Dodger was looking? So 2004.
Yeah.
Okay. So the last 20 years, there have been a serious collection of brilliant comedy films.
But it just worked. Like, you're talking about this ensemble of the cast. They just complement each other. You know, the guy that plays the pirate, you're just like, this is incredible. And like the jokes, the booty jokes, you know, and the gold and all of this. And you just got a smile on your face, but these are talented.
I love.
Yeah. They're just. I reckon that people right now listening to this podcast will be like thinking, right, this is great. How long have I got? Because I'm now going to download Dodgeball and watch it. It's one of those films that just makes you smile, but it's about sport. Some of the sport films have got it wrong to try and mock it in some way. But this actually, for me, just highlights how good. And to imagine the email to the Hoff when they did for casting, we want you to play the coach of the German team, and Hoff's like, what? or trying to get Chuck Norris on board. It's about dodgeball, just typing away at their computer. I love it. It's a very, very good choice, Nat.
How much do you reckon the Hoff commanded for that performance?
a lot, and it's not even like he's on the screen for very much time. I reckon enough money for him to fly back to Germany to do an autograph signing again. So a couple of grand, maybe, at least.
You know what? We are running out of time. I knew this would happen. So we're gonna definitely do one more of yours. We'll do one more of yours, and we'll do some of our listener suggestions as well. So you could do two if you want, because I don't want to force your hand, because you got a couple more on the list. So you can do them both if you want, but I'll retract mine. Mine are going back in the drawer. My other ones, you can take the other two.
All right. You had a good one though. Which is great with Matthew McConaughey. I won't even say which one it is.
Oh, I'm going to save it.
You save it. All right. Okay. For me, I watched it on a plane flight coming back, last year in October. I'd just seen the Seahawks, lose to the Ravens, which was incredible as a Niners fan, and watching Lamar Jackson run the show in Seattle. We went on to Vancouver, flew home. The reason I say that is because I watched this film. It's kind of a documentary. It's called The Edge, and it's all about the England Test cricket team that rose from the depth of the rankings to become the first and only English side to reach world number one in the one day and the Test team. And it's about mental health. It's about how you galvanize a team, make them invincible, and then the after effects and what that does to players, the scrutiny that they put their bodies and their minds under. Incredible, like really touching film. And my girlfriend, it was because we just put the headphones on, want to get home, so just sit through the flight, watch all the entertainment, and I was crying by the end. It was such a good documentary film by Noah Media, and it's brilliant. Even if you're not a cricket fan, you're just seeing what they put themselves under to succeed.
They're brilliant documentary makers, Noah, and you know, big shout out to them. I've got some really good friends there, and you know, for those listeners out there who've been you know, following my stuff for a while, before we brought the pod to ESPN, we made it for a year as the NFL show. We made that, you know, with Noah. So
of course, yeah,
a great crew there, and Torquil Jones, who's one of the producers of this, is terrific. And John McKenna, who runs Noah with Gabriel Clark, they're a fantastic crew. So the Bobby Robson documentary, is one of theirs as well, and that's well worth a watch as well. And they've got other really exciting stuff in the pipeline, so seek them out and seek out their work. They're terrific stuff. It was, you know, incredible, really, the change in the England cricket team. And is it, you know, I'm older than you, and I remember just how bad we were when I was a kid, with the occasional kind of flashes. I'm too young for the kind of both them era, so we all look back at that extraordinary Ashes series. But for a long time, we were flattering to deceive in the wilderness, never really coming together. So it's a fascinating subject matter, and her great things about it. So check that out. You know what? I was smiling as you were talking, because when Harry sent over your list of films, and one of them was The Edge, and I thought, what's that? And I looked it up, and there are two The Edges.
Yeah,
that Google's
this makes so much sense to how you introduced the films that I was going to choose. You're like, and there's one curveball, and I was like, exactly. Is there?
I thought you were talking about the 1997 movie The Edge, and here's the description on Google. Charles, a billionaire, finds himself stranded in the Alaskan wilderness. To his horror, he discovers he's being chased by a Kodiak bear. I thought you were going to try and spin this as some kind of, what a sport, isn't it? Dude, like a Tom Deacon riff on being chased by a bear.
It would be like me saying, what's the Tom Hanks film where he's on it's Shipwreck? No, it's not Shipwreck. Castaway. And me saying it's about football because he uses a Wilson football. That's how...
Volleyball. It's a volleyball movie. I love it.
Yeah, no. So luckily, this is the Edge, where it's about the England cricket team. And I think in this current lockdown period, and when you look at, say, NBA and how these players are going to have to be in the same confines for maybe 3 months at a time, to play as many games, that's kind of what a test cricket team is. And how you need to be a team unit, and how frustrating that can be. I mean, the stories of Graham Swan and Kevin Peterson, which aren't really talked about in this, because that's not what the story is about, but how you might not like the person, but you respect them. And I think in team sport, that's very important. And when those balances go one way or the other, and you can't sustain the respect, then players they have to move on.
Such a good point, isn't it? That you just, and you see, I kind of notice this all the time with things like America's Game and shows that you think they obviously hated maybe too strong. They're obviously completely different characters, and it's inevitable, right? In a locker room, in a dressing room, you're going to get so many different characters, and you get cliques, and you get different players hanging out with different, you know, in different crews, and often there's not much social mingling of any kind. You can see that, but when they come together as a team, that's fine. As you say, that I don't really like the guy, but I've got great respect for him. I can play with him. Yeah, that is always really, for me, a fascinating dynamic as well. You got one more for the road.
Well, staying on that theme, it's Remember the Titans, one of the first American football films I watched. It's poignant for so many reasons to watch this film right now. But that again, it won a human rights gong. It's about Denzel Washington, who's a fantastic, actor, taking a team, and integrating them, making it a mixed in terms of, a normal team that at the time that was predominantly white, and then mixing up with other ethnicities that came together. And it's just a brilliant film. And it just goes to show that same thing. Look, at the time, they didn't like each other, but they respected each other and they grew to love one another and be part of a team. It just speaks volumes.
Denzel Washington, one of the finest actors of his generation. And this has got to be up there. I think, you know, clearly there are performances that he's given, you know, throughout his career. I mean, Training Day, just the extraordinary range of him as an actor. And yet, even though this is a film that we love, that I'm sure our listeners do because we're football fans, and it's a film that's far more than football, as you just so eloquently said, Tom, it's about so much more than that. But obviously, as NFL fans, as football fans, we're going to particularly love it. And I think, in a way, that's why I think his performance in this, again, goes a little bit under the radar. When people are looking at Denzel Washington's career, you're not sure that kind of the non-sports fan, the non-football fan, maybe gives this performance the credit it deserves, because it's so, so beautifully observed. And I can't think of a film that Denzel Washington has done, and this is testament to him as an actor, who's been at the top of his game, who's been working for, you know, 30 years or whatever it is. I can't think of a bad Denzel Washington performance. I mean, if there is one, you know, let me know on Twitter. I can't think, and even, you know, De Niro made Rocky and Bullwinkle. I mean, De Niro, one of the all-time greats, has occasionally, you know, he's going to whiff.
Combining the two guys that we've already, Mark Wahlberg and Denzel Washington made Two Guns, which is a brilliant film. I really, really like it, but it's just, that goes to show that even with the premise is silly, Denzel Washington is just a fantastic performer. He plays, the coach, Coach Boone, in this. Even a young Ryan Gosling, makes an appearance in this. And it's about making this team. Your preconceptions, your prejudices, it doesn't matter. Like, letting nothing come between the team, and that's what he creates. And obviously remembering the Titans, that undefeated, that's what he needed to create. And in a social backdrop that was happening at the time, it's a feel good. It's like, it feels and looks so simple, but throughout the film, you see these old prejudices that get washed away, and you think, wow, this is such a good film, because it hits not just about football, but on a social level.
Yeah, that's right. He's got this pressure on him, hasn't he? This threat, this insidious threat that if he loses a game, then he's going to get the chop. And that's sort of hanging over him. And, it really looks and keys into the, really unpleasant, unpalatable racial prejudice that, as you say, it's a film that right now, I guess, contains particular resonance, for sure. And, it is always a film, I think, that holds up well. You don't tire of it. You can watch Remember the Titans 20 times and you're still going to enjoy it and see different things. And again, that's testament, I think, to the caliber of a film that is durable in that way, that you just never get, it never wears out. And, it is, just look at the cast list here, actually. You mentioned Ryan Gosling. Donald Faison's in it as well, of course, of Scrubs fame. What a terrific series Scrubs is. And, Faison, I've forgotten, is in it as well. So good supporting cast, which is very much the theme, I think, of a lot of the movies we've chosen today. We're going to end up, wrap things up, I should say, with, some of our suggestions from our listeners on Twitter of films that we haven't, obviously got into today. We might well down the line and deep dive into them a little bit more in other shows, because we are going to keep rolling out a few more movie shows during the summer, and maybe get a couple more book shows in as well. We had Stig Abel talk about his favorite sport. What's your favorite sporting book, Tom?
Favorite sport. I particularly like one.
Mr. Happy.
No, I quite like. It's one, Nate Jackson, a former NFL player. Yeah. I think it's called Hard Getting Up or Difficult Getting Up. It's a really interesting story again, because there's no fairy tale at the end. I quite like films that have got a bit of grit. But that book's very, very good. And and if he's listening, please come on my podcast, because trying to hit him up is hard, because if you're inspired by a book or a story, I've actually been reading one about Paul Cannonville, the first, played for Chelsea. And, I've just been inspired to look at different challenging stories right now. And Paul Cannonville, what a character, and what he did to open up, an avenue for many, many different, players of color to play for Chelsea.
Legend Paul Cannonball. All right, Twitter, Neil Elliott says, I don't think this film ever gets the credit it deserves, and with a picture of Eight Men Out. Now, Eight Men Out is a great film. If you don't know it, it's about the 1919 Chicago Black Sox.
Okay.
Through the World Series, famously, and were banned from playing the game ever again. And it was a team that included Shoeless Joe Jackson, who was one of the great ball players of all time, and who famously, or certainly as Eight Men Out suggests in the film, wasn't the sharpest guy, didn't really understand, well, not kind of understood, but didn't really go along with what was being suggested, because it was a few of the team that brokered this deal and got everyone else on board, and the players were being mistreated by the team owner, and Shooter's Joe kind of went along with it, but didn't really, still had an incredible World Series, but was part of it, or considered to be part of it, and was banned from the game. Field of Dreams with Kevin Costner is all about Shooter's Joe, or Shooter's Joe is one of the characters in it that comes, one of the ghosts that comes back and plays in the baseball field that he builds. It's brilliant, Eight Men Out. It's got John Cusack, young Charlie Sheen in it as well. Good cast, and I totally agree with Neil. Doesn't get the credit it deserves. Love Eight Men Out. It's a great shout there. Martin says, if you're talking classics, you must mention Basketball with Jasmine Bleeth.
Oh, yes.
What a film.
That's a seminal university film, when a friend, my best mate, turned to me and said, have you watched Basketball? And I was like, the what? And watch that. And then that was a game changer. Yeah.
Jamie says, Tin Cup, the forgotten Costner sporting epic. Tin Cup, of course, where he plays the kind of aging, down on his luck, out of the game golf pro that puts an improbable run together at the US Open. Tin Cup is vintage Costner. I love Tin Cup. And also, what I love about Tin Cup, without spoiling it, is that the ending is not easy Hollywood by any stretch. Drew says, Any Given Sunday. Well, Vern and I talked a bit about that on the last show. I think we did anyway. Harry might correct me, but we definitely talked a bit about the great Pacino speech.
It's all about the inches. Yeah.
That's great. Let's have more of that. Pacino could play you in a movie, Tom. I could see Pacino doing you.
Yeah, angry, fiery guy. Yeah, that's me. That's me all over. I just happened to, there were so many. I feel like I just chose four films that resonated with me. But when you look at the list that everyone's suggesting, there's so many that I'm like, well, that's tomorrow gone. My schedule tomorrow is watching all of these films back to back, just because I can, and I will do. I mean, there's just so many.
Well, Warren Heyman, Necessary Roughness, which I believe Scott Bakula is in. That's a kind of long, oft overlooked, late 80s, early 90s. Movie that Varsity Blues with James Van Der Beek of Dawson's Creek fame. I know you're a huge Dawson's Creek fan, Tom Deacon. So,
oh, crying and then just, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. Yeah. And then that seemed to be Dawson's Creek. Do you know what? I wanted to put it in, which is the new, Michael Jordan documentary, into, if people haven't watched it, go back and watch it, because I found out through watching it that he was getting up incredibly early, coming back to full fitness, but he was recording Space Jam. So there's something I want to watch again.
Amazing.
because now it'll be in a completely different light. I'm like, wait a minute, he was getting up filming all day to then go and train to get back into the NBA. It was incredible.
Space Jam. They're talking about making another Space Jam. I want to find out more about that. Well, you just proved, as we wrap things up, that we need to do about 11 extra film specials. So a nice way to end. There were some brilliant ideas. Thank you for sending those in, everybody. And we will do our best to get into some of those on the next show. Deeks, it's great to catch up with you, man.
An absolute pleasure to, you've given me so many food for thought with some of the films that you've suggested to watch again. So thank you very much.
And where can our listeners hear your new pod? Because you mentioned it, you talked all about it. I think you gave the name, but I think you gave the full on plug. What's it called?
Well, listen, I wanted to be different and call it something other than my name, but then I thought, nah. So Tom Deacon Deconstructs. It's just an hour conversation with various guests. And if you like sport, come and check it out. If not, just carry on listening to this and then I'll be back, hopefully, Nat.
You'll definitely be back. Bring Gordon Strachan with you. We can talk WWE. That's a hell of a show. Look after yourself, bud. Great to catch up.
Take care.
Lovely stuff from Tom. He will most definitely be back. Go and check out his pod as well. I am looking forward to catching up with him. I'm looking forward to more pods coming thick and fast over the coming weeks. Like we said on the show, we'll do another book special as well, because there is a lot of ground to cover there too. And I'm sure we'll be able to sneak in at least one more movie special, maybe a documentary special. Ollie, one of our producers, was talking about that. So maybe we'll get that in the mix as well. So lots more where that came from. Hope you enjoy. Go and watch at least one of those films on there. And we will check in with you very, very soon. Look after yourself, gang. See you soon.